Welcome to Nerd Trap. I'm Josh Look.
I'm Jeff Luce.
I'm Shelley Rose.
I'm Al Rose.
Tonight's episode, Where No Man Has Gone Before. This episode is the third episode to be aired, first episode to be filmed. It's actually the second pilot for Star Trek. First time that any television show in history got a second pilot. So
true. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm glad I was
there. Because, I mean, The Cage, you know, and then...
Right, well, I knew that it was the second pilot, and I knew that apparently the story is that Lucille Ball
right.
used her power to...
give her the second chance.
But I didn't realize it was the only time that that happened.
I don't... recall.
Now, what was the reason they did a second pilot?
The first one didn't have enough action.
Right. It was very cerebral.
It wasn't Wagon Train to the Stars.
Right. And there was no William Shatner either.
Well, the only reason that, what's his name?
Christopher Pike,
but his real name is something else.
Right.
The only reason that he's not there is because he turned it down.
Yeah.
He turned it down.
Yeah.
It wasn't that they said replace him. It was that he turned it down.
Right.
Whereas they did say replace that woman in a command position. We don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
None of this number one business.
Yeah.
No women in command position. No women that are emotionless. None of that.
I haven't really heard of many other shows getting second pilots in general. So I do think that it's kind of a standout fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know being a Joss Whedon fan, Buffy and Dollhouse both got second pilots. But other than that, that's the only thing I really am aware of. Jeff, you got any other facts for this episode?
Oh,
Mr. Research.
So what we got is, of course, the air date. Can't agree without that. September 22nd, 1966. Written by Sam Peoples.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Who also had a hand in writing Wrath of Khan, though he's uncredited. And much to my delight, wrote several episodes of the Filmation animated series Flash Gordon, which is fantastic.
Oh, that's cool.
Which, like their Filmation's Tarzan, is really centered on the source material.
Right.
Now, when did that come out?
Late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
And, you know, it was very... In fact, each episode was titled Chapter 6, Chapter 7, just like the serials were.
Right, continuous.
So anyway, that's cool because I really enjoyed those when I was, I don't know, 8, 12.
Right.
And so he wrote that. He wrote Wrath of Khan. He wrote a million...
No, he didn't really write Wrath of Khan.
No, well, he wrote... it doesn't say what he did. He's uncredited involved with the story, so he probably did a rewrite at one point.
Okay.
Rewrite or a draft.
My understanding is that he wrote a script that was going to be the second Star Trek movie, but then it wasn't made. And that certain contributions from his script, certain characters and such, carried over.
That very well could be, because he's credited as story, whatever that means.
Okay.
Right.
And then the episode also stars Gary Lockwood as Gary Mitchell. Gary Lockwood also starred in Roddenberry's first TV show,
Lieutenant.
The Lieutenant. He was the star of that show. And then Sally Kellerman plays the female lead in this episode, Elizabeth Denner. Sally Kellerman, we all know as Hot Lips Houlihan from the MASH movie.
Right.
Al, tell us, give us the rundown on what this episode's about.
All right, so this episode is that the Enterprise goes to the edge of the galaxy and travels through the edge of the galaxy, this time around in an amazing CGI sequence. But certain crew members, especially those with ESP, are affected by the experience, and especially Gary Mitchell, Kirk's old-time buddy, begins to get on superpowers in a very, Charlie X kind of way, and eventually becomes so powerful that, you know, Kirk has to fight him in a duel to the death.
That's pretty much it.
Right. Right from the bat, I'm a little shocked that somebody at NBC chose to run this episode right after Charlie X. It's really such a similar story.
Yeah.
And as Josh was trying not to say when he was trying to hold everything for the podcast, maybe not even quite as good.
Right.
Not quite as good. And I think because... It's still in pilot
I'm surprised they aired it at all, because it is so ungelled.
Yeah.
And it is so primitive in a lot of ways compared to the other two episodes we've seen, as far as sets, as far as costumes, as far as character development, as far as even the characters that are on the set.
Right, they have no idea who Spock is. Spock is the guy that shouts the whole time. Every
every line he says in that
it's
first scene,
so
shouted.
Funny.
Readings coming in.
So let's get that right out of the way. Right. There's some major discrepancies in this episode. And because you said it's very much in pilot mode.
Mm-hmm.
Another little factoid about this episode is that it was filmed over a year before it was even aired.
Right.
And it's only 3 weeks in to its run. You know, so that's a significant amount of downtime.
Yep.
So you're going to see some major discrepancies in the costumes in particular. They haven't established the three color, department.
Right.
Color scheme with that.
The costumes are... Yeah, the costumes
Spock
are horrible.
They really are.
Spock looks
makeup.
Ridiculous in his makeup with the yellow costume and the yellow-green makeup. He just looks ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I get the yellow-green makeup. I understand. He's got green blood and it would change the tint of his skin, but it looks terrible. And his eyebrows are like... Yeah. Damn near vertical. You know
the funniest
I mean?
Thing is, I swear, it looks like community theater because they have this one point where Spock is wearing this gun belt, and it's an old, looks like army surplus belt that they spray paint white.
Right. Because that's space.
It's a space belt.
And they're just people walking around in really ill-fitting costumes. They look like they're wearing their pajamas.
There's a girl in the background at one point wearing a red dress straight out of 1966.
Like a pink thing.
I saw that. Nice costuming there. Hey, what do we got in the closet? Well, there's this.
Also interesting, all of the women are wearing pants.
Mm.
They one of the things that the NBC said when they looked at the pilot was this show would sell a little better with some short skirts.
and they were right.
Sometimes they're right.
We love those short skirts. There's a number of things, however, to talk about in this episode, even though, you know, right out of the gate, we've made it abundantly clear that we're all a little down on it. First off, opening scene between Kirk and Spock. What are they doing? Playing 3D chess.
That's right.
We talked about last episode... air date order, this is the first appearance of 3D chess. However, this could be the real first appearance of 3D chess. Also, the first appearance of Scotty. Right out of the gate, you got Scotty. Not wearing red, he's wearing beige, because there's yellow, and beige.
There's green for command.
Right.
Yeah.
It's more of a buff for what Spock and Scotty are wearing.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, like we said, Spock's appearance is weird.
Right.
The CG, however, when you watch the CG version, that first scene when they go to the edge of the galaxy.
Well, also, even before that, they have a scene of the Enterprise kind of, like, coming out of a nebula.
Right.
And it's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, when they go into the barrier at the edge of the galaxy, which I remember... from watching it back in the day, that what it really is at the edge of the galaxy, you find this big pink line.
Right? Yeah.
You got to be really careful. You can't go over it or anything.
It's very conventional space.
You're at the edge of the hex. That's it. That's the last hex on the map.
Can we talk about the 3D chessboard?
Yeah.
I've mentioned before, I enjoy the 3D chess. I wanted to learn how to play 3D chess. Very big fan of the 3D chess. When Kirk beats him because he didn't play logically, annoys me.
Okay.
If it's chess,
right?
Spock, the humanoid calculator, can't figure out
how
he could end up in checkmate in one move.
That's true.
It reminds me of like when you watch golf movies on TV or the movie theater, like Billy Madison.
Caddyshack. I watch one. Caddyshack.
It all comes down to one putt that'll make you win or lose. Well, that's not how golf works.
No. It's the whole rest of the game.
If
Billy Madison?
Whatever it is.
Happy Gilmore.
Whatever.
Get your shitty Adam Sandler movies.
You don't want to. The one with the golf clubs, not the hockey stick.
Right.
In
the
any
one
case,
with Bob Barker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, you make the one putt, the best that's going to do is tie you.
Right.
Right?
Right. Right.
They're trying to show that even though Spock is all logical, that Kirk will make that one daring move that no one will ever think of.
I understand the reason it's there, but...
Right. Jeff, would you say that it's...
Illogical?
Illogical.
I would. I would indeed.
Highly illogical.
That is illogical!
Why does he yell? I am so glad somebody took him aside after that episode and said, you know that thing you're doing where you're, like, bellowing information?
Everything?
On the bridge? Don't do that anymore.
Right.
Don't.
Leonard Nimoy actually has acknowledged that and says that he's very embarrassed by that. But he said at that point in time, he really didn't know what to do with the character.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you watch those old Navy or submarine movies, there's always someone yelling things.
Well,
that's what it is. It's very like, yeah, World War II Navy.
Right. Even
you know,
when Mitchell...
That's what the first... Either the captain gives an order
and somebody else yells it out. And
right.
You even see the more military theme when Mitchell comes on deck... And he says to the navigator, you're relieved, whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm relieved, sir. And
then right.
They don't
right.
ever do that ever again.
No.
But it's there.
Yeah, I mean, it was established, I think, pretty early on in the show that, you know, how this ship operates, not only, you know, internally with the people on the ship, but as we'll later see in the series, you know, in battle, in combat, is very much that it's a submarine. You know,
right,
that
right.
happens to be in space. You know, there's a lot of inspiration taken from that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So let's go to once Gary Mitchell gets his powers and talk a little bit about that. Because how do you know he's got powers? He's got silver eyes.
He's got silver eyes.
Silver eyes. It's really distracting how he never really seems to be looking... at anything, and it's just, I mean, that's the nature of those contact lenses at the
it's
time.
The contact
that they couldn't see
also,
anything.
He also is really great. The way when he becomes that other being, that his whole body is, he holds himself differently, and he kind of stares off
yeah.
into space. And it really, yeah, he's just really great. And there's that one, like when the couple of times that he becomes Gary for a second, and then he just holds himself differently, and then goes back to being that being.
Right.
That he carries that off really well. There's a couple really spooky scenes with the eyes. One where he's reading really fast,
yeah,
and they're watching him on the screen,
and
then he just turns and
yeah,
looks
and
at
looks
Kirk.
At the screen. So is there a
so
camera
great.
In the infirmary? Is that what it is?
There must
apparently.
Be a camera.
Yeah, that's
kind of creepy. But he knows. That Kirk is watching.
Spock's always watching.
Right, and then there's also, there's one fade out where it just turns to black, everything just turns to black except for his eyes, and
yeah.
it's really great as well.
But I think what Josh says is true, it does make it hard to look at him.
Right.
It does, and the whole time I'm looking at it, I mean, I've read extensively on the subject of those contact lenses, actually.
I would like to know, because there were times when I was watching it where I felt like what I was looking at was somebody had contact lenses in his eyes, and they were irritating.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's actually two contact lenses with tin foil in between. And
yeah.
And, I mean, these are 1960s contacts, which
right.
these are hard glass.
They were still... I mean, that's the way they were for a long time, though, as a costume prop. When I was in college, I went to school for a lot of filmmaking classes, and one of the movies that I looked at extensively because it was a shining example of how to accomplish the most technically with nothing was The Evil Dead. And the Evil Dead movies use a lot of those contact lenses, and I read a lot of accounts of the actors from those movies that said those are the most uncomfortable things you could possibly imagine. You can't imagine, and you can't see anything.
Right.
So it's a lot of just kind of looking in a direction and hoping, I'm looking at the thing I'm supposed to be looking at.
I think you can actually see the discomfort a lot, because in the scenes where he's in the infirmary, he's got kind of like a half, you know, he's looking out of the bottom of his eyes, and his eyes are half closed. And it, coincidentally, it works to instill the quiet menace.
Right.
Because I think that's, well, I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, his eyes are kind of half closed. I think that's more a reflection of just how god awful it was to have those things in your eyes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You could look at his eyes and it looks painful.
Right. Another discrepancy. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just to talk about Gary Mitchell for a little while. What a great character that is. And amongst the things that I do like about this episode is them talking about Kirk at the academy. You know, a pile of books with legs. All right, and everyone says you got to watch out in Lieutenant Kirk's class. He'll make you think. That whole bit is really great.
Right. Sent that blonde's direction.
Right, sent that little blonde in your direction. I almost married her. That's such a beautiful,
that was a great,
just great, great bit. Learning about that, you know, Kirk
right.
is a hard ass, but and a hard worker.
And he likes women.
But he likes women. Yeah.
What I like about the Gary Mitchell character is, you know, you have... Stereotypically, you have two types of villains. You have the really bombastic, scary, loud, screaming all the time villain that's going to destroy you. Like Khan.
Yeah.
Khan is very aggressive in your face and loud, and he's coming at you. Mitchell is the other type of villain. He's a calm villain. Mm-hmm. He's going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know he's going to kill you. He knows he's going to kill you, but...
It's that confidence. That confidence...
He doesn't have to.
Knowing he's going to kill you.
He doesn't have to raise his voice.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't need to. Exert himself. That makes him more terrifying.
Where he says, I'd probably do what Spock is thinking right now.
Oh, just kill me.
Kill me while you still can.
Yeah.
Well, he's not angry. He's bored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like they say, I mean, if they let his power go unchecked, it would be the equivalent of the crew sharing a ship with, you know, a ship full of white mice. Right. Another major discrepancy, and this is always a discrepancy I really find interesting, particularly in the beginning of the series, Sulu's place on the ship.
Yes, I knew you were going to enjoy talking about this.
We
ever search for who the heck
who
is
the hell
Sulu.
Is Hikaru Sulu?
Right, so Sulu, first of all, is wearing a blue shirt.
Yeah, apparently
he is the head of the Astro Sciences Department, which is space science.
Did he talk geometry?
Now, is this something that they say on the show?
It's in the transcript.
It's in the transcript?
Yeah. I went back and read the transcript to find out exactly what his position was. And where they have all heads of departments on deck, sir.
He's the head of the...
Head of Astro Sciences. Not physics.
Because he's a physicist. Because
it's space science.
Right. Because when Kirk is asking, you know, for everyone's opinions, he says, Sulu, and Sulu says, well, if you want the mathematics of it...
Astro science.
I'm the space math officer. Thank you.
Well, then I missed something, because when the old doctor comes on, he says, all the life science people are here when he comes onto the bridge. And there's him and the psychiatrist and Sulu. They all come on together. Maybe. So he wasn't referring to Sulu when he said, you know, we have all our life science.
No, Sulu is space math.
Okay.
Yep. Space math. Not a botanist.
Not a bus driver.
Not a bus driver. Space math.
So did they? Do you think they said, okay, we don't need him to do that after the pilot was over, but we really like this actor, let's make him the botanist?
Right.
And then they decided we don't really need a botanist, but we still really like this actor.
We like
actor.
This guy, we need a reason to have him on the bridge.
Yeah.
We want him on the bridge.
Maybe... Yeah. Sulu has triplet twins, right? Or triplets. Yeah. He's three of them. He's three of them. Right?
Maybe Sulu has triplet twins.
No, he doesn't have triplet twins. No, hold on. Hear me out. Because it's such a far-fetched idea. It was supposed to be a joke.
Is that three sets of twins or two sets of triplets?
It's kind of like Spaceballs. How many Sulus are on this ship, right? There's a lot of Sulus. We never hear his first name. I don't know. But anyways, I think that you mentioned the doctor. Here is another place where this episode is severely lacking.
Mm-hmm.
The lack of bones.
Right. He's so flat.
He's so flat. The guy that's playing the doctor is kind of awful.
I think they realize that. I think that's why he was out and DeForest Kelly was in.
Right. So let's talk about another little thing I noticed in the scene. I first noticed it in the scene where he's reading really fast and talking to Kirk on his little robe there, okay? And then later on in the episode when Kirk comes in and he's making the cup float throughout the air, that logo on the cup is the Federation logo.
I saw that too. That's just crazy to me because...
You don't
When that show aired, there was no way anybody ever saw that there was a Federation symbol on that styrofoam cup. That's the craziest thing.
But
I almost wondered if they CGI'd it in. But it's there.
Now we notice it, though, because, I mean, we have so much more Star Trek lore to draw from. And apparently, somebody else down the line also said, like, so that's the Federation logo right there. There it is. It was there the whole time.
Right.
I think that's kind of cool, actually.
But they had that Federation logo from the very get-go. Yeah.
You want to know what I think is a cool thing?
What's that?
No, they're on the bridge, right?
Yep.
And Denner,
yep.
The female, and, pardon me, Mitchell have... been zapped.
Right.
And they're looking over the records of the people with ESP potential.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just a split second where they zap Mitchell's index card and then Denner's index card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You watch the show, you can't read a damn thing on those things. But I went back and I paused it so I could read them. It's great.
I caught it.
Mitchell is described as always having had high ESP powers, and that he was stationed on a planet where the main method of communication with the inhabitants, which is Deneb or whatever, it gets mentioned later on in the show, is through telepathy. And he's the one person that could communicate directly with the
Denebians.
Denebians? Sure, why not? Right? So I thought that was cool. He also lists his age as 21.
Really?
Right.
That's weird.
And then
that is weird because he's younger than Kirk, but Kirk is.
Well, you got to figure Kirk. That gives it away that Kirk is like a student teacher at the academy when Mitchell's there. Mitchell's a student,
right?
So that was cool. And then with Denner, they say she's always been fascinated with ESP. That she wrote her thesis on ESP, and that the reason she was on the colony that she gets picked up from, which the doctor says, and this is Denner from. We just picked her up from the whatever colony that
happened. Right.
Is that she was studying the ESP potential of those people. And she is listed as like 19.
And he's 20.
21.
Yeah, I'm not buying any of that.
Yeah, doesn't.
Yeah.
But it's, I just thought of, number one, I thought of, I was amused that they have like index cards with like hand penciled underlining.
Right, on the computer.
But I thought it was a nice touch because it's so fast. It doesn't. A person watching that show in the 60s is never going to know what those cards say. Mm-hmm. Ever.
Pause button hasn't even been invented.
Right. So I just thought that was a nice little, you know, right. Somebody in the prop room is making a little extra flirt.
No,
right.
Or it could possibly have been, because when I've worked on shows, this kind of thing has happened, where you have the background information written up for the actors and the writers, and then the prop person has to put something in there. Like, what do you have written? We're just going to take a copy of this. And put it, you know, into the medical file or the newspaper or whatever it is that they have to produce.
Right. Yeah, that's another.
Steal my dream, Shelley.
Still, I think it's cool.
No, it shows some love.
It does.
So anyway, I thought that was cool.
Kirk and Spock's fisticuffs. Their little tag team against Gary Mitchell there, where like they Spock elbows him, Kirk punches him. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes, they're kicking ass together.
Yeah, that's the only way they would have taken him. They totally surprise him when he's monologuing.
Yeah,
they catch him monologuing, and Kirk gives him an elbow to the ribs.
Yeah,
how do you take out a guy like this?
Yeah, pretty cool. I got some prop things here.
Oh, yeah, okay. Chance. Well, there's a number of prop things to talk about, especially because it's the whole pilot thing, and so they're still using that old phaser.
Yeah.
But can we talk a little bit about one of my all-time favorite props?
The phaser rifle?
I was about to say, I actually wrote that in my notes with 3 exclamation points. I was like, phaser rifle is awesome.
How do you not ever see the phaser rifle again?
How do you just not take it with you every time just because you can?
Because it's only got 3 shots.
True, but
it's got the little rotating cylinder with 3 energons.
It only has 3 shots.
3 energons?
It does to me. All space energy will henceforth be known as energons.
No, it's great. It's great. I love all that old stuff and old guns and old movies and things like that. And it's so different from the stuff that you see in Forbidden Planet or Lost in Space. It's,
right.
It's got that weird little 3 cylinders and a stocky back with the long front.
No, the art department that did the props for Star Trek, I think, really did a great job in that. Even when things are different, they reference back to the motif,
right?
Like we talked about it last week with the, this is added in later, so it doesn't really count. But the freighter,
it still looks like a Federation freighter,
right?
Yeah.
Because of the, you know,
right.
The nacelles and you know, they're very similar looking.
There's that great. There's one of those promo shots that you see all the time with Kirk sitting there with the phaser rifle. that I really love. It would have been nice to see the phaser rifle in a couple of episodes.
Never again.
That's it.
Never seen again.
We don't even know if the Federation has phaser rifles.
I was buried with Gary Mitchell under that giant rock.
Yep. The know-how to make more phaser rifles was buried with Gary Mitchell.
Tombstone. We got to talk about the tombstone.
Well, hold on. This whole scene, I think, it generates a lot of discussion, I think. First off, when they go down to that planet, that painted background
is awesome.
I think it's great. I think it's really great. I kind of get warm and fuzzy about it because they show it a lot during the end credits.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, I don't know, that just, I watched Star Trek, during the winter an awful lot. So it was just that cozy, like, comfort from the outside miserableness of winter.
Right.
You know, and that backdrop just reminds me of, like, yeah, everything's fine.
It's a visual whoopee for you.
It is awesome.
But, you know, the remastered episodes, they have all that great CGI stuff, but they also seem to have touched up, like, those matte paintings somehow. They look better. Just brighter and clearer and just better.
I think that there is one episode where they did alter it, but this is not one of those cases.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think I know what you're talking about. We'll get there eventually.
We'll get there eventually.
No, it's not altered, but it looks nicer than it looks that it used to look, and then it looks when they show it in those ending credits.
Can we talk a little bit about Catharian apples?
And the fact that they look a lot like pears?
I thought they were papayas. The seeds,
if you see the seeds,
those are papaya seeds.
Yeah.
Ever since he went there, he's really liked those Catharian apples.
Yeah, well, you know what it means to be a god.
Yeah. The rest of the set, however, is...
Painted rocks?
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Well, they haven't yet gone to the spackle.
No, they haven't. But still, there's a lot of shots where, you know, you look at something that's in the set, and it's just... So this is going to fall out at some point. This is going to be used in a very convenient manner, probably to fall on somebody. And the tombstone. The tombstone is kind of infamous because it says...
That's James R. Kirk.
R. Kirk, yeah. I read that the CGI team wanted to... There was a lot of debate.
Really?
To go in and change that to T.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then they decided, let's not do it. Why? I don't know.
Because it's tampering. It's changing content.
Yeah.
I don't think the CGI is added content. It's enhanced content, but it hasn't.
It's not to fix.
It's not to fix anything.
Right.
Well, it...
See, Gary Mitchell just wasn't quite as omnipotent as he thought he was.
That's what it was.
And that's how Kirk defeated him.
Right.
He gave him his wrong middle name.
Right.
He says, yeah, this fucker thinks...
My middle name is not Rumpelstiltskin. Ha ha!
Rumpelstiltskin Kirk.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I can think of many ridiculous R names.
Rasputin Kirk.
That fight, too. That fight is a lot of the...
he tears his shirt.
When does his shirt get torn?
Yeah, first
shirt
tear.
You don't see it getting torn. Suddenly
he's got his nipple out.
Right.
There's this
really awkward shot, too, where Kirk is like... He's got his fists up as if he's ready to fight Gary Mitchell, and then all of a sudden he does a backflip backwards.
Because
it's so weird to look at.
It's not the best choreographed fight.
No, and the whole scene where they go down the planet, from that point forward, I think if you were to pick out any one reason, and I'm kind of showing our hand a little early here when we go and talk about the things that people hate about Star Trek, this whole scene... is the reason why people hate Star Trek.
It is the stereotypical cliched Trek fight scene. It's missing an element.
What's that?
It's the blood trickle coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
That's not there.
Okay.
But everything else is. The torn shirt.
Yep.
The I will leap upon you as if that will accomplish something.
Mm-hmm. The clasped hand.
Yeah, the two-handed judo chop. Space judo.
All those Federation moves they teach you. I don't think he doesn't shoot
the drop kick,
right. Yeah. He hasn't quite developed that skill.
I didn't understand watching it. This guy just... I can think of it and make it happen. He can't do that when someone's punching him.
Right.
Why can't you just think of, Kirk, you're a butterfly, boom,
yeah,
you're gone.
Yeah, you're done.
Well, because, what's her name, Dr. Daner, has just done her little fingertip electricity thing to him and
this is like some pre-Emperor Palpatine shit.
Right. But he doesn't have any power. We've seen him a couple of times, he momentarily loses his power.
Yeah.
So he loses power and she says, quick, you only have a little bit of time. So Kirk decides the most efficient thing to do is to kind of pummel him for a while.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he couldn't get to the rifle or something?
No, the rifle's knocked out of his hands early when he first approaches.
Right.
And he doesn't have anything on his hip.
No. Right. No, because if you got a phaser rifle.
Okay.
Yeah. You know.
And it almost seems like at the end he's maybe going to kill him, but then he gets the silver back in his eyes.
Yeah.
He's got the big rock over his head. He says, please forgive me. So he's about to bring the rock down.
Right. And why turn him into a butterfly when he created that perfectly good grave for him? You know what I mean? It's like, man, I put the effort into that.
I guess so. But I was actually talking about why, you know, Kirk's able to, after he gets his powers back, is still able to beat on him and put him into that hole in the ground. And he's still like, they're lying there for a while when the rock falls on him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, it sucked.
Why doesn't he just get out?
Well,
if he's so omnipotent.
We have to jump up to what the story is really all about. And what you have here is it's the Charlie X story, only, as we discussed last week, with an adult instead of a child. Gary Mitchell is infused with these superpowers. He's losing his humanity. He knows it. He's going to become a god. Is it his residual humanity that prevents him from just zapping Kirk into atoms because they were friends? Is that what stops him? Or is that just me reading more into it than is actually there?
I think you're reading more into it than what's actually there.
It's just poorly written?
I think that this episode is very flimsy.
Yeah, flimsy is exactly the right word. I'm glad you came up with that.
Because after all, it is the humanity and, well, Denner's death is ridiculous, too. She does the Palpatine zap on him, and then she's just lying there, and then she croaks.
She talks a bit.
Yeah, it's a very Shakespearean death. I'm going to give a soliloquy, I'm going to brew some tea, and then I'm going to die.
Yeah. Let's talk about that last scene, though. The very last scene when they are on the ship, I think, does have a bit of you know, what we expect from the character of James Kirk, and that is to mark in their, you know, in their service records, that they died in the line of duty.
Right.
On both of them. And he's very dedicated to that. They didn't ask for what happened to them, and he wants their records
to be clean.
To be clean, to be honorable. I think that's actually really
great. Unfortunately, it's followed by Spock saying something like, I felt for him too.
Yeah.
And Kirk says,
I felt for them too!
Kirk says, there may be hope for you yet, Mr. Spock. And he smiles.
He smiles.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm going to grow up to be a human.
Yeah. And he's very yellow looking in that shot.
You know what I think? Here's one other aspect of the Gary Mitchell character that I liked, or found interesting, is that his role on the ship is never really defined. He's a lieutenant commander, which means he's the equal of Spock, the first officer.
Well, he's driving the boat.
But that's, you know, who's first officer? Spock, right? He's a lieutenant commander. This dude's a lieutenant commander. What does he do on the ship?
Yeah. Well, Spock's science officer.
Is he like the third watch officer? But anyway, never mind that. I like the fact, or I'm intrigued by the fact, that Gary Mitchell embodies the cliches later thrown onto Kirk. Gary Mitchell is a ladies' man.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, Denner comes over and says, he hits on her and she says no. And then even when the ship is going through the barrier, there's the little yeoman there.
Right.
Yeah. He holds her hand. So was he been slamming her up against a bulkhead? Who knows? But he's a ladies' man. He's also the misogynistic type, because when Denner says screw, he's like, oh, refrigerator unit.
Right.
Yeah.
Classy, Mitchell. Classy. He's also a manipulative asshole, as shown when he tells Kirk that, yeah, I threw that girl at you so I could get a better grade.
Right.
And Kirk's like, well, I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
I almost married that girl. Well, yeah, whatever, man. You know, he don't care.
He Kobayashi Maru'd him.
Right. But, you know, he's just the arrogant, womanizing, misogynistic self-absorbed jerk that everybody says Kirk is when he really isn't.
Which I think doesn't really match what he becomes when he gets these superpowers. I think his character pre-superpowers logically would be, I'm going to use my powers all the time, and I'm just going to get everything I want. Actually, right. I think he'd be a lot like Charlie X.
Mm.
Something about this just doesn't jive. This whole episode is just, like I said, it's flimsy. I think it's...
Right.
I think that's really quite poorly written, really, when you get down to it.
And I think the other thing is, it is so lacking McCoy.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think that one of the things, and you know this from film school, mm-hmm. is if you want the audience to care about a character, you have to surround that character by people that care about him.
Yeah.
And you don't get this feeling that anybody that's there that cares about Kirk, you know, Elizabeth really does care about Gary, so Gary becomes really the lead in the show because he's the only character that you as an audience member care about. Kirk is almost like peripheral. Spock is peripheral.
Yeah.
The doctor that they have in there is invisible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, if anybody's going to care about him, it's this doctor.
I think it's once they got the characters... when they, you know, in the two previous episodes that we've seen, and they put a lot of effort into showing them caring about each other and being friends with each other, that makes us as audience members care about them and want to be part of that world. I did not want to be part of this world at all.
No.
Why not?
I mean, does anyone else feel that way? Star Trek totally. And you go, I wish I could be in that world and wear that uniform and hang with those people.
Right.
And you watch this episode and you're like, I don't want to go there. That looks like a horrible place, and those are horrible people. They're boring or mean.
Yellow guys yelling all the time.
When I was thinking about how I was going to rate this episode and my reasons for saying it, because I quite honestly didn't know how you guys would feel about this one.
Well, but I tell you, my feelings on this are mixed because it's no, like, when Star Trek gets bad, it gets really
bad.
This is not really bad. And
however,
it does have some of this interesting, like, stuff about Kirk and the Academy. And such like that, and you like Gary Mitchell, and I like that Gary calls him Jim. I think that that's really neat. That they're really close,
right?
And I think part of it is that it suffers because we just saw Charlie X.
And it's the same story.
And
this
it's
is
the
a
same
lesser.
Story. And yeah, because on its own, I don't think it's not that bad. It doesn't have some of those horrible inconsistencies that some of the later stuff has, and so.
I was alarmed with how much I disliked it, mm-hmm. because I don't remember disliking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was only, I think once I saw the whole series as, you know, it is one entity, and now I go back and watch this one, I realize, oh, this is actually on some really shaky ground.
Because what you're missing is the best part of the show, the Kirk, Spock, McCoy.
Yep.
McCoy's not even there.
Yep.
And Spock is somebody
else.
He's
not Spock. Yeah.
He's not Spock.
And there's none of that sense of this is what Star Trek is all about. This is what Star Trek's trying to say.
Right.
And it's not just Bones' absence. Uhura's absence,
mm-hmm.
I think, is just as felt here. You don't get any of that sense that humanity's awesome and we're exploring space and, you know, we're going to accomplish great things.
Right.
It's more just
an action adventure.
It's almost, it's an action adventure. It's pulpy, just in one ear, out the other, nonsense. It's not what made Star Trek rise to the level that it's at now, so that we're still talking about it.
Because they're trying to sell it.
Because they're just trying to sell it.
It doesn't have a higher purpose.
No. It's everything. It's none of the things that we love about Star Trek, and all of the things that people make fun of Star Trek for.
And there's no optimism in it.
No, there's not.
You always feel that optimism in the other
episodes. Yeah,
no matter how dark it gets, you feel things can get better, the future's going to be great.
There's hope for Spock. He's going to
Well, I suppose it's also the redemption of Denner. She doesn't go down the dangerous path of godhood. She takes out Gary Mitchell.
She does.
But it's,
I think all the talk about godhood is really ridiculous, too.
Well,
really ridiculous in this episode.
All right. We're going to be like gods. Like gods.
It's so silly.
I wish you could have known what it was like to be a god.
Cringeworthy for sure.
Here's another cringeworthy thing: is Kirk's decision to execute Gary Mitchell. Right?
Yeah.
Up to the point where he strangles the dude with his finger on the dead man switch to blow Gary Mitchell up.
Yeah.
What has Gary Mitchell done?
He, Kirk isn't going to execute him. He's going to leave him there.
Well, I know. Well, even that.
He's going to leave him there. What Gary Mitchell has done is not what he's done. It's what the ship before them experienced.
I understand that. But there's no justice to it. He hasn't done anything. And yet they... Kirk, as judge, jury, and executioner, says, we're just going to maroon you on the edge of the universe by yourself forever. And then I'm going to go back to the Federation. I'm going to tell nobody to ever come here again, and you will die of insanity.
Well, Kirk says it's because he's messing with his ship.
I understand, but there's no justice to it.
He's messing with the ship. He's messing with Kirk's ship.
All right.
You can't just do that.
I just think...
You, Jeff Luce, cannot right now walk on board some Navy cruiser and start manipulating its controls without getting yourself in a little hot water.
Yeah, but I'll go into the brig. I won't be put in the South Pacific on an atoll to die.
Well, that's because you don't have superpowers.
Oh, okay.
What did we learn from this episode?
The same things we learned last week.
They say, in this episode, they say absolute power corrupts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think we learned anything.
We learned that silvery contact lenses hurt the fuck out of your eyes.
I think most importantly, we learned that the phaser rifle is really fucking cool.
I think we learned that first impressions are really important, and that if this was our first impression,
which is probably why it wasn't, right?
Yeah, this was the first one aired in the UK, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Shelley, you learn anything from this episode?
I think that the heart of Trek is the relationships between the people as much as it is the exploration and the adventure.
So you're going to rate it, Josh, right away.
Al, you got to remind me of our scale again.
Impulse to 9.
Because I watched
I thought it was Impulse to 8.
It was last episode. First episode, it was Impulse to 9. It's a 10 point.
Impulse to 9?
It's a 10 point. 9 is dangerously fast. That's dangerously good.
Yeah.
Nine is dangerously fast. So
she can't take it, Captain.
I said,
she's not built to stand these speeds.
Wow, that's almost as good as Josh Looks Cowboy.
That was pretty good.
Cool. Here's Josh Looks Cowboys. She can't take it, Captain.
I said Charlie X was a 5, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, who can remember that far?
I think that this is a warp 3.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really not into this episode, and I feel though something about it tells me that yeah, you should like this because this is an interesting look at the early goals of the show. I'm really glad that it's not the goals of the show. Ultimately, I feel I don't need to like this, and I don't dislike it. That's the thing. I just don't care because it's not Star Trek.
Mm.
I think that's ultimately what it is that. I'm not sure if I can even classify this as Star Trek.
It does have Kirk in it. And it does have the Enterprise.
It's got the Enterprise. And it's got Spock. But I don't think that that's... I don't think that's enough.
They're not right. They're not there yet.
No. What do you rate it as, Al?
I'm gonna give it a warp 6. I do think that, you know, Gary Mitchell is fantastic. And so is... what's her name there? The walking refrigerator.
Daner.
Yeah.
Sally Killer.
They're both really good. And the story is interesting. It's just too bad that we just saw it last week. I'd say Warp 6. It's got some good stuff in it. But it's not quite there.
Shall we?
I'm going to say Impulse Engines Only.
Wow. Gasp with astonishment.
No.
The ship is on auxiliary power.
I'm entitled to my opinion. So you shut up. It was slow. It was stilted. It was boring. I almost fell asleep. It is not a Star Trek episode. I do not know where it came from. It should never have been aired. They should have thrown it away.
Yeah.
All right.
Some other show, so as you said, it's got Kirk, it's got the Enterprise, that's it. And I actually think I dozed off during part of it because I was so bored.
I'm going to give it a warp factor 4. As you said, I certainly don't like it, But I don't hate it either. And because I've seen the whole series, I can say there is far worse coming.
Yeah, it's
on the horizon like a, like a train wreck waiting to happen.
Yep.
I love how Gary Mitchell played it, or Gary Lockwood, whatever, the guy playing Mitchell. I love how he played the subdued villain, because I find those to be far more menacing and sinister than an in-your-face villain. You know, when he's talking with Kirk, or when, like when you said, when he's reading really fast, and then he just eyeballs the guys on the bridge looking at him.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Oh, but it's got some bad things.
Yeah.
I don't know what they might be! Like you said, it's the same story we saw last week, only less well done, less character-driven, more, hey, here's a crazy idea, we'll give these guys superpowers and see what happens.
Yeah.
I think it was an episode written and designed to show what the guys that would make the decision wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's not a story in of itself. It's a, we need to get, we want to get the show made. Let's tell them what they want to hear.
I think that that's going to do it for this episode of The Nerd Trap.
Good riddance to,
good riddance to this one.
Has gone before.
Yeah. Do you like this podcast? I think you do.
I think you ought to.
You ought to.
You have taste, right? You like good things.
You do.
You like the podcast.
You like the podcast. Okay. Do you consider yourself a distinguished, enlightened individual?
Cogito ergo sum Excalibur minutum? You like this podcast.
See? You're going to rate it on iTunes, and you're going to rate it highly.
Why would you do it elsewise?
Exactly. Exactly. It just doesn't make sense. It's
illogical.
Illogical.
It's illogical!
Tune in next time.
All ratings set at 5 stars.
Sensors indicate we will be watching
The Naked Time.
Just like 10 years after this is made, they wouldn't let women walk around with their crotches showing like that, and they all had to wear those little pantsuity things. Like,
yeah.
If you watch the Brady Bunch where it covers their crotch, couldn't show that on
TV. Might get some unwholesome ideas. So, or a woman's legs.
It's funny. Over. It's funny that people got unwholesome ideas anyways while watching the Brady Bunch. Right? Right. Yeah. I mean, there's something inherently unwholesome about the Brady Bunch, you know? Greg
Greg's afro?
Yeah.
Unwholesome. Unnatural.
It's not right. It's just not
right.
It's wrong. Just not right. And the dog, don't even get me started.
And Alice?
Alice?
What did you... Christ. What is consort concubine maid?
She should be ashamed of herself.
What's she... All recording stopped!
Your parents will help you move out of their basement. They're embarrassed by you. They want you to leave.
They say to get a job!
Keep it up and you'll go blind.
Alright, put away your phaser rifle.
Don't worry, Mom, it's only got 3 shots!
That hurt.
That episode sucked.
They did suck.